I hate pencils. That scritch on the paper grates on my nerves, and I loathe the forced humility of using them to do a crossword puzzle. A futile rebel, I do mine in ink and make a mess crossing out bad guesses, just to prove something. No doubt this traces back to the trauma of grade school, everything does, with that Iowa Basics exam for which we had to have two sharpened number two pencils, or face the humiliation of a tisking teacher handing us a spare from the jar she kept for the deplorables. I hated the specificity of that terror. And I hate the ick of erasure, with its crumbs and failures to complete. And I hate that garish yellow, and the shudder of biting on the metal ferrule when stuck, and the way the eraser gets all mucky and makes a mistake even worse. Pencils remind me of rule-bound reading rooms and archives, whose curators clearly have not had sex in years. They remind me of scoring in competitive anything, and whose handwriting ever looked better in pencil. Who uses a pencil to write love notes? I suppose some should. Or to sign interesting legal documents? You cannot trust a pencil. We think of Dickensian urchins selling them on street corners, yet they can be quite pricey. And though we call them lead, there's not a whiff of lead inside them. And while I could go on, yet I have to admit a grudging fascination when I read, "The pencil, an interior cylinder of baked graphite and clay, all housed in a wood case, creates as it is being destroyed." The observation is Carol Becky's in Pencil, part of the Object Lessons series curated by WashU's Ian Bogost and Christopher Schauberg. Becky collects pencils, and she works hard to convince haters like me. The pencil works better than the pen, she insists, despite, or maybe because of, its impermanence. One can write upside down, though I have never needed to do so, and in cold, and the graphite does not bleed in rain, and if a pencil snaps in two, you now have two pencils. I have to grant her a pencil's practicality, and I do like its simplicity and, even if faux, its humility. Pencils lend themselves to wry observation. The genius physicist Richard Feynman found it amazing how many people even today use a computer to do something you can do with a pencil and paper in less time. "There's life for you," said the inimitable Dorothy Parker. "Spend the best years of your life studying penmanship and rhetoric and syntax and Beowulf and George Eliot, and then somebody steals your pencil." Somehow I suspect Miss Parker of preferring fountain pens. But I respect writers like Mary Oliver, who needed only a place apart to paste, to chew pencils, to scribble and erase and scribble again. Steinbeck guarded his pencils, too. His poodle probably stole them. And Hemingway was downright cultish about them, always keeping two sharpened to use in blue-backed notebooks while inhaling the fragrance of a café crème. "I have always been a pencil," Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec announced enigmatically. Should I ask AI what he meant? I refuse. The highest praise came from William Eckenbarger in the Philadelphia Inquirer. He called the pencil the most useful, least appreciated, most stolen article in the world. It has certainly made its cultural mark. We pencil somebody in, wear pencil skirts if we dare, mock boring clerical workers as pencil pushers. We all know the crunchy grind of an old-fashioned sharpener and that scratchy friction I despise and Beggy calls a subtle sound. Maybe I need to fork over some cash for the famous Blackwing, said to be smooth as silk, half the pressure, twice the speed. Eulogizing Stephen Sondheim, Lin-Manuel Miranda told us that Sondheim used a Blackwing 602 to write his songs. Faber-Eberhart stopped making them, but California Cedar Products has picked up the mantle. Blackwings have a flattened ferrule, that metal band, so they will not roll recklessly off a piano or music stand, and their eraser is rectangular and replaceable. The mystique is undeniable. Their users have included Walt Disney, Motown founder Quincy Jones, Vladimir Nabokov, Truman Capote, Eugene O'Neill, E.B. White, Leonard Bernstein, Aaron Copland, Oscar de la Renta, and animator Chuck Jones, creator of Looney Tunes, who once remarked, "An animator is an actor with, wait for it, a pencil." Where and how was the pencil born? Most modern histories set the pencil's birth to the early 16th century in Keswick, Cumbria, in the UK. Natch. When a violent storm knocked down a stand of trees and uprooted a deposit of pure graphite. Beggy also tells us that in the latter part of the 19th century, quality pencils were unpainted. Then the Czech pencil maker Koh I Noor picked yellow to signal, unwoke, its use of Chinese graphite. In the 20th century, though, yellow pencils were assumed to be made in the U.S., and they nearly always had an eraser attached. I guess we know, deep down, how often we screw up. Beggy has fun describing other collectors, especially the connoisseurs who shun an eraser because it will shift the weight, or who resent six-sided pencils whose facets have over-sharp edges. And every once in a while, in the sea of interesting facts, she catches you off guard with something profound. "Once sharpened," she writes, "a pencil is constantly changing. It grows shorter, clearer, darker, fainter. And page by page, my sympathy grows. Beggy has brought me round. I'm now willing to heed the advice of graphic artist Lou Brooks. Don't underestimate the pencil."